Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
So I got off stage Saturday night, and we did a meet and greet in the lobby, and we're saying hi to a lot of listeners and people who like this show, and people who are nice enough to come out and see the stand-up comedy. And three different people came up and said, "Steve, let me ask you a question." And I said, "Yes, what is it?" I said, "What are the words to that song that starts the show every day?" And I said, I don't know. I really don't know. I just think it's cool. Sure, it's gibberish. Some one-hit wonder from, where is it, Scandinavia? Finland? Aren't they some European one-hit wonder?
This group? I don't know. Like Flock of Seagulls or Men Without Hats.
Not that big.
I know.
It's a cool song.
80s reference. Cool.
Great crowd, by the way, Saturday night. More on that later. At 6:11. Hi to everybody. Hope you all had a nice weekend. And Mary Vandeveld with the rain. I suppose it's going to be an ugly morning.
Already is.
Okay, excellent. We'll update your traffic in a few minutes on that. It's Friday, Andre and I were among those attending the Milt Rosenberg Memorial Service. More on that later, because it was a gathering of really smart people.
I was just going to say, it was gathering the minds.
And us.
Right, and I would turn to you and go, wait, what does that mean? You're like, I don't know. When they started quoting Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew,
I felt like it was Fight Club for smart guys.
Yeah.
and some women as well, because they were all trying to top each other.
Yeah.
Milt would have loved it.
Oh,
now, my
completely.
Set of beliefs, he was in the room anyway. And then it was cool because his grandson spoke at the end, and that was emotional, but funny.
Very funny.
So nice service for Milt.
Kid.
Here's what's coming up today. You got your Dr. Most. You got your Ryan Nobles from CNN. You got your Mike Ditka. You got your Dan Hampton. Anthony DeClaire from the... I don't know that I've ever seen the Blackhawks in the last 10 years struggle the way they're struggling now. It's ugly. And we can't have it. Got to stop.
Oh. It has to stop soon.
Like now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm voting for now.
Well,
I'm going to go ahead with now.
That'd be a good place to start because there's only 36 games left.
Yeah. And you can imagine over at the Madhouse on Madison that they're working on it, obviously. Dean later as well. This is show number 1072, and let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
Unless we can come to an agreement on things that I have yet to decide that we're arguing about, the show will shut down this morning at 8. Just wanted to let everybody know.
Oh, all right.
Oh, no.
Furlough?
No, we're too important. We're too vital. We're vital cogs in the wheel of something. The federal government has continued its good time shutdown, and for the first official day, federal workers will go without pay. Not because they've done something wrong, not because it's their fault, because the babies in Congress can't figure out how to get along to a point where they can do the most basic part of their job, and that's fund the federal government. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers today, and for who knows how long, will be out of work. Swell. Next. Is that the new paper crumple? Or is that one of the options, Joe?
Yeah, we're testing a few out today.
All right, good. Next. Oh, that was X. Sorry. Dense fog advisory issued for Chicago. But yesterday was weird. Yesterday, here's what happens. Well, Steve, what happens is the temperature rises and snow is on the ground. Moisture rises into the air, causing fog.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks. Really good.
Thanks. Yeah, that was fog all day yesterday. We got some more fog today with a heavy rain, so be advised. And again, I tell you this all the time. When you get into one of those areas that are a little dicey, floor it and get out of there as fast as you can.
And put your high beams on?
Put your high beams on, exactly,
and
so you can
it.
See what you're about to hit. after you hit it.
By the way, that was lightning just now.
Yeah, we had a thunderstorm.
Or it was the new red light camera on Michigan Avenue.
No, we have. Did they put one in? They made
what? I jumped.
We have thunderstorms all over.
We also have a flood advisory in effect now for Waukegan and parts of Northeast Illinois and Northwest Indiana as well because everything is melting.
Hmm. Well, that's not good.
Snow.
Next.
Oh no!
Is that a Star Trek thing?
How many people
a
just
Jetsons
woke up?
Thing?
It's like a gun, a ray gun.
Let's go ahead and vote no on that one. Hundreds. Of, I already told you. Vice President Mike Pence met with several folks yesterday that were really not that thrilled to see him, and some folks that wouldn't agree to meet with him. But he's in good hands today because President Netanyahu is thrilled to have him in as he reinforces the president's decision to move the American embassy to Jerusalem, among other things. Over the weekend, there were several people who refused to meet with him.
Yeah, Mahmoud Abbas, Palestinian president, Pence wanted to meet with him too, and I guess he was supposed to leave the country, but he moved up his trip so he could leave right the day before Pence arrived and called him wanting to meet with him, Mahmoud Abbas, a slap in the face.
You know, when Abbas wouldn't meet with him, you know, they knocked it down to like Abbas's second. And eventually they got to a guy who met Mahmoud Abbas at a grocery store. And none of them would meet with Pence. So that's not a great development, but no surprise. Next.
He's trying to quack us up.
Maybe one quack because it is wet.
Yeah,
I sort of like the idea of the quack on a wet day. Make a note of that, Joe. That when it's raining, maybe we have theme separators for these stories.
Got it.
The women of Chicago came out in force once again. You covered this weekend. Estimate a crowd of how much?
300,000 people.
How's that compared to last year?
250 last
more.
Year. So there were more. And I'm telling you,
are we the only city that had an increase?
We were number two. Washington, D.C. was the biggest one. They marched everywhere. New York, Colorado, here. Huge here. Absolutely huge turnout. Crowds were so calm and peaceful. And again, just like last year, they had the streets. They thought they were going to be closed till 5. They were reopened by 3.
Nice job.
Just neat and orderly. And we'll talk about some of the signs too later.
Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to tell me the funniest sign you saw that you can say on the air.
Okay.
And then I want you to write down the funniest sign you saw that you can't say on the air and just hand that note to me.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Next. It's a tad jarring. 2 weeks of hype to look forward to. The Patriots and the Eagles. Tom Brady is 104 years old, and he's only got one hand. And yet he found a way to get it done yesterday.
And you knew he would, right?
Of course you did. When the worst thing that could have happened yesterday was for Jacksonville to be ahead by 20-10. Because you know why? It made Tom Brady angry.
It got his attention.
Made him angry.
He didn't even know who they were playing.
That's exactly right. Too late. Touchdowns unanswered by the Jaguars, 24-10 to Patriots. And then you thought, wow, pretty entertaining game. The second game is going to be even better. This is teed up. This is going to be great. Mm-hmm. The Eagles maybe have a shot, but the Vikings are probably going to win. They might even win handily. And they jump out to a 7-0 lead and go, oh, here we go. What was the final, Dave?
38-7, Steve.
Well, who won that game?
Philadelphia won that game.
38-7.
Last 38 points.
38 unanswered points. Ask me who I picked yesterday.
I know who you picked yesterday.
I picked the Jags and the Vikings.
Yeah.
I picked the Jags in an upset and the Vikings. Once again, you can count on me for prognostications.
And for the second week in a row, I stuck with the Eagles, although I had them winning by like 3 points.
You just missed the other part.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't see that coming.
And the Vikings at some point in the second half quit and started to get chippy.
They did.
Now here's something. A friend of mine, a lifetime Minneapolis guy, a friend of mine brought this up. I hadn't thought about this. The vendors and the hoteliers and the restaurant owners in Minneapolis, they're not necessarily upset about this. Because if you have Minnesota hosting a home game, you got less people coming in.
Yeah.
I know this because it's not just tickets. It's not just tickets and broadcasters. You got the ancillary types who want to be a part of the situation.
Yeah.
So you're going to lose money if you have a home game. So here's what's going on in Minnesota today. And you're going to be there tomorrow for Northwestern.
Be there tonight, hopefully.
Yeah, so there's what's happened in Minnesota today. The people like the hotel, wherever you're staying tonight, when you check in, they're going to go, oh, boy, are we upset that the Vikings didn't win yesterday. gosh darn it. And they're actually thrilled because you and the Northwestern contingent are bringing in more money.
Well, we're not going there for the Super Bowl.
Well, in general, you know what
yeah.
I'm saying.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, no, the economy. Yeah. They ran the numbers. But
there's not that many home people that go to the game Super Bowls anyway.
No, here's what happens. The tickets get released. The tickets get released for the game based on each team is allocated a certain amount of tickets. The people from Minnesota that would be allocated those tickets live in Minneapolis, live in Minnesota. So those tickets, those people, and again, all these people. I lived through the only Super Bowl in Minneapolis when I was in Minneapolis. You have, and obviously that was 25 years ago. And as it's grown bigger and bigger, right now the average ticket price is $5,000. $5,000 per ticket.
God, I'm going to pay that.
But you have people that come in into the red zone that is around all of these stadiums and the places you have to have a pass just to get into. That group, they don't necessarily have tickets to the game. They're there for the celebration or the sadness.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I do think that there will be people in Minneapolis who have tickets who will hang on to the tickets because Super Bowl's in their hometown. And if they had them, if they were lucky enough to get them, if they don't want to scalp them.
If you're a true fan, you sell those today.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you got them, scalp them.
You yeah, sell them today.
Totally.
You don't get a chance every day to go to the Super Bowl.
You were talking about the chippiness on the field. I don't know if you saw in the fourth quarter, there was a little bit of a melee, and they started playing their version of Fly, Eagles, Fly, like our bear song that's kind of
The theme song for the Eagles, yeah. The fight song.
And those cheerleaders came out and they had to get
in the middle of it.
They had to get on their yard yeah. lines and they were like pushing around the players to get in their spots to do their fly routine.
These are Philadelphia girls.
They were poor girls.
I know they were aggressive.
They are that one powered by cheesesteak. Right. You don't want to mess with them.
I was impressed. Like they weren't going to let these big players get in their way.
Powered pom by pom you.
That's awesome.
All right, one more.
That's a no.
America's first cashierless convenience store, Amazon Go, opens today in Seattle. We're sending Steve to Seattle in the next few minutes so he can report on it, but we don't have time to talk about it now, but we will. Because how does it work? Mm-hmm. How can you have a store with no people in it?
This is the same store that wants to have people come to your home and go into your house and put your packages down, which I'm very much against.
What? Yeah, no. You don't want to let people in your house.
No.
I don't let people in my house ever.
Even you.
So, listen, all of that was sponsored by American Weathermakers, the heating and cooling people, the 60-Minute Men. Dr. Mo's coming up. Stand by for that. What else am I supposed to mention here, Joe? I was so wrapped up in your incredible separators for the stories, I've lost track. All right, prepare for a little cheese here for a second, if you don't mind. I'm gonna throw out a little cheese. 312-981-7200 is the text number. Here's a text question today. What's one thing you could do? One unselfish thing you could do, and I challenge everybody on the show, too, for this, to make the world a better place.
Oh.
Now, stop gagging in your car. I know that's a little cheesy, but here's why I'm bringing it up. We live in such a selfish time. Everything's about what I need right now. Look at this government shutdown thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides are to blame.
Mm-hmm.
And people who make not a lot of money, because they work for the federal government, they can't go to work today.
Right.
Every building needs people that make not a lot of money. I'm not talking about people just people that empty the waste baskets. I'm talking about everybody. The majority of the people that work in D.C., and Dave, you know this. You grew up there. These are people that you knew, you know, your entire childhood.
Yeah.
Federal workers aren't rich.
Mm-mm. No.
They're just folks. No. They're just hardworking, regular folks.
Right.
And they don't get paid today because of the government. But it's not just the government. It's the people that cut you off in traffic because they got to get somewhere and they're more important than you. It's the people that take 47 items in the 10-item line at the Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop it. We got to stop it. We're too selfish.
So we'll all do something today selfless. Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the text question is, what could you do? What could you do? Or what would you like others to do as well?
I know what I'm going to do.
Make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little cheesy, but I think we need it. It's time.
It's nice. It's a little kumbaya moment.
312-981-7200. That's my text question of the day. Man, I met some great people Saturday night after the show. But obviously, I missed the Pat Tomasulo show.
I saw some of it. Very funny.
Now, Dave, you were working. Did you have time to see it, or were you traveling?
No, I was at the TV station, but then I was en route, and I DVR'd it.
And have you had a chance to watch it?
I have not yet.
Did you see it?
No, I have not.
It was very funny.
Sandberg, come here. Give me a review on that.
Mayor Emanuel makes a cameo in it, too.
I heard he was going to
very, very funny with the statue.
Yeah, I heard he was going to swing by. Pat was going to swing by. So the premise is Pat Tomasulo goes out with a camera and does a lot of stuff on the street, along with some pre-taped stuff in studio and the studio audience. The sellout, I think, is about 25 people, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. They were very excited, that audience.
But
super
they were
pumped.
Well, you think about it. You look back 50 years from now, 100 years from now, you go, where were you then? Those people are going to say, I was there for the first night of Man of the People with Pat Tomasulo.
They made guests for the first show, too.
It was, they did a really funny thing about Bozo. Mm-hmm. People that didn't get to see Bozo as kids and how it's affected their lives. And it was really
a follow-up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, I was on the waiting list forever and then the show ended.
Or like one of the guys, their parents took him to a fake Bozo thing, thinking they were going to see the real Bozo, and it wasn't. It was in a parking lot in like Arlington Heights. It's very awesome. These are all very funny. One of them, they had like five kids and only four kids could go, so the youngest, she didn't get to go.
That's not right.
So it affects her now. He's really funny though, and when he sits at the desk, his tie is untied, like
now,
it's a little loose.
But our Bozo friend, you know, we know we were friends with Bozo.
Yes.
Was that the Bozo? Did Bozo talk, in other words?
Bozo came out at the end, so these people did get to meet Bozo.
But Bozo didn't talk.
Spoiler alert.
Did Bozo talk?
No, he hugged them and stuff.
Right, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I didn't hear Bozo.
Was it our friend, the Bozo?
It was.
Okay.
But he was excited, and people were very excited to see him. One of the guys was a big guy, and he picked Bozo up and gave him a big like squeeze.
How cool.
It was really funny.
That's important for people our age who didn't get to meet Bozo.
And for years, there was a rumor that Bozo and Tommy Hawk were the same people. They're not. No. They're completely different people. Mayor Emanuel was on?
He rejected a statue. And then he complained about how people, you have to tell people to not eat Tide Pods, which was very funny.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All right, so you would recommend it.
I would recommend it. And I watched it. So, you know, Pat had a Hawks game. My Pat had a Hawks game on Saturday night. So he watched it when he came home. You know, we recorded it. And then I watched it on Sunday morning because I didn't want to stay up.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to watch it yesterday. So this is my counting on your review. So if you're recommending I watch this, I want you to know this is going to take 30 minutes of my time away
probably
from...
Probably like 22 minutes, actually.
But that's 30 minutes of my time away from the hyper-focus on this show. Are you prepared to have me do that?
I am prepared.
All right, fine.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll see if he can, you know, if second week is as good as first. I mean, he may have left it all on the table.
He may have used all the good stuff. Again, that's Man of the People. It's Saturday nights at 10 o'clock on WGN-TV. Sponsored now by VictoryAutoRecords.com. We'll come back with Andrea's headlines next. Try to decipher exactly what Trump weighs, because he does not weigh 239 pounds.
Something in your bedroom closet besides clothes.
How about clothes you've gotten too fat for?
You know, there's a big difference between muscle weight and fat weight.
The fingers you have used to dial are too fat. To obtain a special dialing wand, please mash the keypad with your palm now.
Probably hiding a six-pack ab behind the KFC belly.
He's hiding a keg.
That guy in little gold.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble.
Saturday Night Live. Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the podium, bringing out Dr. Ronnie again. Roll it.
I have again asked White House physician Dr. Ronnie Jackson to come out here and tell you about how not fat the president is. Okay, Dr. Jackson, get him, Hoss.
Oh, thank you. All right. Once again, this is the president's unbiased, 100% accurate health assessment. At the time of examination, the president was 71 years and 7 months young. His resting heart rate was a cool 68 BPM. His weight, a very stout 239 pounds. He has a gorgeous 44-inch Coke bottle waist. His height, 75 inches, with legs that... well, they seem to go on forever. Size 12 shoe, so you can fill in the blanks there. And, it's my expert medical opinion that the president's got a rocking bod with the perfect amount of cushion for the pushing.
That's That's Saturday Night Live this week. I'm Dr. Ronnie. And I feel bad about playing that.
Woke up after midnight. Both my arms and legs were sore.
Because, you know, this is the new Let's Be Nicer to Each Other show today.
On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'll tell you.
And I wish that there was someone I could call.
You remember the president likes Starburst, the reds and the pinks?
WGN.
I've purchased the flavor red pack of Starburst.
I have a tina on my thighs, pink stuff in my eyes.
And I'm going to open this now. As a salute and a show of unity, and offer the staff the President Trump preferred mini Starburst unwrapped flavor reds. What the president would prefer.
Call Dr.
Andre, you can start passing around if you like Starburst. Dave, there is a kale flavor in there. Okay.
Did they just start making these, the red and the pink?
The little mini unwrapped?
In lieu of Trump, or were they always?
I just noticed them this
weekend. Steve, this is very unselfish of you.
Yeah, well,
there's
that's the point.
Been red and pink.
No, but these are unwrapped minis.
It's just, okay.
It's just pink and red unwrapped.
These are unwrapped
minis.
Are
there green ones now?
Nope.
You said kale?
No, they're disguised as red and pink.
He was making that up.
Oh, Dave, hey, Dave.
Steve, thank you for your unselfishness.
Dave, I don't think you should be selfish and just eat healthy.
Right?
I think you should eat these Starbursts with the rest of us. It's a show of unity.
Mm-hmm. You're very good.
I'm right behind you. I've got your back.
Joe and Sandberg, please come out and have a Starburst when you can.
I prefer the lemon lime.
Me too.
I like the lemon too.
Listen, that may be fine, but that's a selfish choice on your part.
You
just talking about what you prefer.
Very tasty.
So
again, Steve, thank you for leading us off. And being unselfish.
Try. 312-981-7200. How are you going to make the world a better place? Government's still shut down, at least until noon today. We get to Dr. Kevin Most in just a second. Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. And we say good morning to Dr. Kevin Most. Hi, buddy.
Hey, how are you?
All right, how are you?
I'm good. Hey, just one quick thing. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's important that you share and all that, and we know how important breakfast is as a foundational meal for all of us, but maybe you can expand where you shop for breakfast outside of, like, the candy section at Walgreens, and
yeah,
maybe...
it's a lot of sugar.
Listen, Dr. Most, we're trying to show some unity. You know my problems with the president, but the president is eating pink and red Starburst. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to send out a bouquet of pink and red Starburst here. Would you like one?
Well, I'm just thinking of all those fourth graders sitting down in front of a bowl of Cheerios right now saying, mm-hmm. well, if Mr. Cochran can have candy in the morning, why can't I?
Well, kids, listen to your parents, regardless of what they say. All right, so I'm looking at some notes you sent me here, and your notes are always fabulous, and we post Dr. Kevin Most's notes after the segment every week, and you should go there for all the information he's about to impart. There's a million tests they'd come out, some more important than others. But there's talk of a blood test for cancer detection. Are we really on the horizon of this?
Yeah, we are. And it's actually really cool. So this is a study that was reported in Science, a very reputable journal, last Thursday. And it talks about a blood test called CancerSeek. And the awesome thing about it is it is looking not at one cancer. It is looking for 8 different cancers in something as simple as a blood test.
So how is it different than other blood tests?
Exactly. So, how is it different from a PSA? Well, we know that PSA we have some problems with, but it's kind of the same foundation. What essentially the researchers at Johns Hopkins have said, if tumors are present, they must be shedding stuff into the bloodstream. If we can identify what they're shedding into the bloodstream, we can then identify the cancer. And if we can do that in small amounts and early, we can identify cancers very early.
So is this possible that we could be, and obviously it's not going to happen tomorrow, but eliminate the need for a colonoscopy or maybe even a mammogram?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You probably won't eliminate the need for them, but you'll eliminate the need for them as a screening test. And what I mean by that is women go in for a mammography knowing that hoping that they do not have breast cancer, and then the mammography does that test. What would happen in this scenario is you would have the blood test it would identify the possibility of cancer. Then you would have the mammogram to see if the cancer was present and where it was. Same for the colon. If the blood test showed that you had a possibility of colon cancer, then you would have the colonoscopy to identify where it is and how it can be treated. What's probably more fascinating is that it's looking at 8 different cancers, 5 of which we have no screening tool for at all right now.
Well, that's
so
amazing.
They wouldn't go away. It'd be the second line of screening, basically. How soon would this happen? Because it sounds great. I mean, I think it would alleviate a lot of fears as well, too, Doc, with having to be called back again and again.
Absolutely. And it will allow screening, like I said, for 5 different ones. The 3 that we already can do, lung cancer, colon cancer, mammography for breast cancer, those would still stay the same. But the other ones, liver, stomach, pancreas, esophagus, and ovarian, we have no screening test for. So those would identify and would allow for the next step. How soon are we? They're doing a large study right now. It's been proven very, very well on a small study of about 800 people. Now they're doing a study of 10,000. If they find early results that are good, I think you're going to see this be rolled out in a much bigger fashion within a year, 2 years.
And that's that by the way, is the express lane for a study to approval to results. And basically, because if I have this right, this is a 30-year study that we're getting these results on, right?
Correct. What they've been doing is looking over the last 30 years of trying to identify different genetic markers, different markers. So this is something that's been going on for a long time. They finally got to a point where they thought they had perfected it. So what they did is they said, all right, we're going to take 1,000 people who we know have cancer. We know have different forms of cancer, and we're going to run the blood test that we think works on them. And it worked pretty dramatically, especially on some cancers. They then took another 800 and said, we're going to run the test on these individuals who we think are healthy. And it actually identified cancers in those individuals as well. So 800, not a big number, but pretty substantial, to be honest with you.
And the top,
how to roll this out for 10,000 is going to give you really good data.
The top killer, lung cancer. Did you mention that?
I didn't, but it is. It's one, you know, when we look at some of these, we look at lung cancer and we look at ovarian cancer. Those are and pancreas, I'll say. Those are the 3 that when I look at this, it gets very, very exciting. The reason being is that often by the time we find those cancers, it's too late. We really don't have a lot that we can do. We can extend life a little bit, but there's no way that we're going to cure anything. There's no way that we get to a point where something can be done very quickly and easily and with less toxic treatment.
So would this be a test, Doc, that you can just go in and ask for, or would it be just, is it going to hopefully become routine that you do this? You can do,
Yep, I think it will be something that eventually will become routine, to be honest with you. And then it's just going to be the age issue. You know, we always talk about 50 for colonoscopies, and yet here Eddie Olchek at the age of 50, before he even had an opportunity to have a colonoscopy diagnosed with lung cancer. We all know We all know of individuals who are young who have had breast cancer, and if they didn't hit the mammography screening timeline, this would be a simple blood test that would allow that without having a lot of that other additional screening to show false positives, false negatives. So it's really, it will be fascinating as this comes out.
So the study expands to 10,000 people. They're going to be tracked for 5 years, but that doesn't mean it's going to take 5 years to go to the next step of this.
Correct. So I think what's going to happen over that 5-year period is you're going to start to see that they've identified more and more, and they're going to change and tweak the test as we go along. They want it to be very sensitive and very specific. They want to find disease early, and they want to make sure, like Andre was saying, that you're not getting a false positive. In other words, the blood test says you have cancer, but when we go to look for it, we don't see it. So we want to make sure that it's catches cancers early, in that early stage, so that we're going to make an impact and that we don't scare people with results that cause additional testing.
All right. I don't want to shortchange another thing we were going to tackle today. We don't have time to do it fairly.
Yep.
So let's bring you back as time allows this week to discuss Dr. Larry Nassar and the question of trust in the examination room and how old should your kid be before it's okay for them to be in the room alone with the doctor. Obviously, you should be able to trust your doctor, you know, your doctors, nurses, and associated staff. And 99.99999% of all medical personnel are, you know, beyond reproach. But this Dr. Larry Nassar thing, I think, scares some people. So I wanted to have you address that, and you wanted to address that at some point this week. So we'll get that scheduled.
That sounds perfect, Steve. I think it's something that is important. You know, the trust that we're given as physicians is important. We want to make sure that that's not eroded. And I also want to make sure that parents have a good understanding of what they should do in an exam room and what they, you know, what the process should be as they're asked to step out of a room.
Yeah, I suppose, too. That's a good question. That's a good part of the question, you know, because some parents can be too intrusive and maybe you don't get great information, too, if they're lingering. So let me bring that up, too, when you come back.
You got it.
Thanks, Doc. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here, and the news is next.
Robert Kraft, along with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, have their 27th playoff win and their 8th conference championship together, and they're bound for Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis. The final score, the Patriots 24 and the Jaguars 20.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
It's time for Dan Hampton.
That was Bob Sochi and Scott Zolak on Patriots Radio. Tom Waddle's father-in-law used to do Patriots Radio?
Yep. Gino.
Lola Bridgetti.
Gino Cavalletti.
Gino Cavalletti. Gino's still around? He's still kicking, isn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah. Sponsored now by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Dan Hampton, the Hall of Famer, joins us. Hamp, pretty good first game, and I thought, man, I can't wait for the second game. Second game was awful.
For all the Viking believers, it really turned bad pretty early. But it's a crazy league. It's a day to day. You know, everybody used to say it's week to week. It's day to day, and I don't know which one you want to talk about first, but a couple of things just kind of popped out at me. For all of us Bear fans,
mm-hmm.
The Philadelphia win is a good thing because that is the model that Ryan Pace and the brain trust up at Hallis Hall has decided to emulate. You go get the hot Andy Reid assistant, make him your head coach. You go get a veteran-savvy defensive coordinator that you don't have to mess with. Well, that was Jim Schwartz, Swans, and now we have Vic Fangio. And you go to work with the number two overall pick in the draft that's a quarterback that, you know, everybody thinks can be, you know, superstar. So that's the model. Now, the one part about this that nobody figured on is Carson Wentz going down and Nick Foles coming out of nowhere, and he was easily the MVP in the game yesterday. And on one hand, you say, okay, Ryan Pace, you picked a really good model to follow, but guess what? The Philadelphia Eagles, they were a lot better at evaluating veteran backup quarterbacks because we got, you know, the statue, Mike Lennon, and they got Nick Foles as their backup, and they're going to the Super Bowl.
Are they good enough to compete with New England, and considering that the greatest of all time, Tom Brady's going to have 2 weeks for his boo-boo to heal?
Yeah. Look, you know, this league, I mean, there's a breadth of difference between a lot of teams, and it's just, you know, a couple of plays, a couple of penalties. You know, one of the reasons the Vikings, you know, went down early was – okay, the pick six, you know, that's something they hadn't had to deal with. And when Case Keenum threw that and they returned it for a touchdown, obviously that was a body blow. And then the strip sack, which set up an easy score, now, boom, they're down 21-7. They couldn't come back. Their offense really wasn't built to be a team that's able to come back. Well, the Patriots, we know they can come back. They've done it, you know, an extraordinary amount of times, but in the biggest games and on the biggest stages. But the one thing that is so glaringly obvious to me is New England's defense is not good. They don't have good personnel. They may have, well, their secondary is pretty good. You know, Chung's a good player. They may have two or three guys that I'd like to have on the Bears' defense. But the majority of them couldn't start on the Bears. And I'm just saying, a lot of what they do is a byproduct of their offense most of the time giving them a lead, and teams can't wear on them, where they can just kind of, you know, situationally blitz and achieve pressure because they just don't have dominant players in the front seven. So, yeah, they can. Philadelphia matches up pretty well, and nobody has really talked about it. I mentioned it on Pro Football Weekly last week. I said everybody's talking about Minnesota defense, and yeah, they statistically they were number one in the league. But I said Philadelphia's offensive line is pretty darn good. They will do a pretty good job of, you know, handling them, and they did. And I got to tell you, Philadelphia's offense and defensive line far superior to New England. Now, can New England make the pitch and catch plays that they do each and every week and make it pay off? Again, this is it's going to be a great matchup. But I got to tell you, you know, it's 2-1 seeds, and when Carson Wentz went down, everybody said, "Oh, there you go, they're done." Well, Nick Foles, boy, he gets a big attaboy from me.
Well, I mean, you look at this guy; it's not as if he hasn't had a little bit of success. I mean, he's had some okay seasons, not outstanding seasons. Blake Bortles in Jacksonville, I thought he was playing pretty well against that New England defense for at least half the game, Dan. And then that drive at the end of the half, I thought was the one that really killed Jacksonville, even though it wasn't until late in the game that New England took the lead, because he had the back-to-back plays, the play that knocked Gronkowski out of the game, then the pass interference. All of a sudden, they're in the red zone, and you give Tom Brady the ball there, and you're in serious trouble, and that's exactly what happened.
They seem to find a way, whether it's by hook or crook, you know, they'll make a big play, or they will force you to make big mistakes. They'll come up with a turnover. They are so well coached. And in contrast, that's one of the things that for, you know, the last couple of years I've been, you know, screaming, hey, there's a reason why these guys win. They are prepared physically, mentally, and they're focused. They don't make, I think, what was it, 10-1 in the penalty department yesterday, in that game. Jacksonville, yep, continued to blow their foot off, and New England took advantage of it time and time again. And that means you practice the way you play. We didn't practice so good because we damn sure didn't play so good here in Chicago.
Do you learn, I don't mean you, do the Bears and the Bears organization learn from watching this play out, or are they on vacation now?
No, they're watching. The NFL is the biggest copycat league of all. Anything that works, everybody wants to copy. We're doing what Philadelphia did. It's a template. Kansas City assistant, number two pick, veteran defense. Okay, that being said, think about this. And this is, I don't think anybody's even brought this up. But in the championship game matchups, three of the four teams, they ran a 4-3 defense. You know, everybody's been going, ooh, the 3-4 for years and years. Well, guess what? The three best defenses in football this past year, Minnesota, they were number one overall. The Jacksonville Jaguars, I think they were number two, and they were number one against the pass. And Philadelphia, we saw yesterday, they were number one most of the year stopping the run, and they had seven or eight pass rushers. They all ran basically a 4-3. And so you look for the Bears to kind of look at each other and in an epiphany say, we need better and bigger pass rushers, because a pass rush is always the great equalizer. And as Tom Brady goes to his eighth Super Bowl and looks for his sixth victory, the two that got away were to the New York Giants, because the New York Giants in a four-man line pass rush pressure beat them.
30 seconds, Dave.
I think the key for Philadelphia here is to lead the game by more than 25 points.
Right.
Right.
With less than 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. You can't, don't get up 28-3. Get up 31-3 and they'll be okay.
Right. Hey, Hamp, the Bears 85 documentary. 1 week from tonight, a special showing around the country?
You know, I went to Canton a couple weeks ago. Little Dan and I went over, and we Jim McMahon was there.
Your favorite guy.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And anyway, afterwards, we did like a little Q&A panel. And the movie, it was really, and again, I'm flattered that everybody, you know, remembers. But we got up and we were doing the Q&A, and the funny part was, one of the writers goes, "Hey, Jim, when you in New Orleans and you made some crazy statements and you received death threats, were you scared?" And I kind of broke in and I said, "No, because Mongo and I had already threatened to kill him three times that season." And the whole place was up for grabs after that.
I saw a shot. Is that where McMahon took a headband and put it on the bust of Pete Rozelle in the Hall of Fame? Is that part of the documentary?
He's in mid-season form here at as he nears 60. But, I got to tell you, there's a... it's a tapestry of all kinds, Obama and Bill Murray and all these different people. And if you want a real fun little walk back in time, it was great, great fun to watch.
Yeah, 1 week from tonight, and then the sequel, Hamp and Mongo kill McMahon. That'll be shot later.
One
last thing, now that. Every game is there's only one game left. The season's over.
Yep.
I talked to Kaz and OP yesterday, and every year at the end of the football season, kind of a sadness, a pale falls over us. And now we have to enter the football anxiety recovery treatment program each and every year. Now there's an art. There's an acronym for that, but I don't want to say it. Football Anxiety Recovery Treatment Program. We'll be in that for the next 2 weeks while we get ready for the Super Bowl.
I totally understand. And by the way, Hamp and OB in particular are available for children's birthday parties, so we'll set that up as well. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks. Go Bears.
And we'll talk to him before the Super Bowl as well.
Get it. Wait a minute. Spell it.
F-A-R. Okay, I got it.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We live in a selfish, selfish, selfish time, people. The government remains closed because the Republicans and the Democrats can't find a way to figure out the incredibly complex chemical process of being able to keep the Dreamers, the DACA recipients, in country without sending them to a country they don't know and still doing the budget, the most basic function of government. At noon today, there will be a test vote. And if that test vote gets to 60, they will take a regular vote. Leaks this morning indicate they won't get to the number. So I said, listen, yeah, it's a little cheesy, but how are you going to make the world a better place? Mm-hmm. Forget about all the negativity for a day. How are you going to make the world a better place? 847 texter. Be patient with people ahead of me with fewer groceries. Did it last week. Help the elderly or those who are handicapped. Wave to people you don't know. Say hi when someone lets me cross in traffic and say thank you. Agree to disagree with politics with no name calling. Or laugh it off. Those are all good. Mm-hmm. 309. I'm taking a friend to therapy and visiting three friends in a nursing home. It's very nice.
Very nice.
269. Make the world a better place. I'm going to tell someone I love them. I love you, Andrea.
Oh, I love you too, Steve.
Well, that's right.
Oh, that's in the texter. I love you, 269. That is so sweet.
847, how about this? If somebody lets you pull out in front of them in traffic, how about a little courtesy wave or a nod to show your appreciation instead of just pulling out? 708, taking mom and sister to their doctor's appointments before I have to do my own stuff. It's just a little thing, taking care of family and not complaining about it.
That's right.
708, stop dwelling and fighting over the childish things on Twitter. Just ignore it.
Here. Gosh.
And 312, become a foster parent. How about this? Talk about stepping up. If not that, then consider being a big brother or big sister. There's great kids out there who need a great adult in their life.
Yeah, volunteer.
Just a couple of things.
Absolutely.
That don't involve the jerks in Congress.
Something very little, too. I'm going to do this today, and this always makes me so happy. And you've done this a bunch of times. just buy the cup of coffee for the person behind you in line.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, that is such a cool feeling to get up there and they say, okay, you know what? Your coffee's been paid for.
Yeah. And then the person in the window has to explain over and over again. No, it's okay.
Right. I want a venti, triple latte.
So in light of that, what is closed and what is open today in the federal government?
Okay. What is closed? IRS customer service, some disaster recovery efforts, many government research.
Wait, you said IRS customer service? I didn't know what was open.
Yeah, don't they call and leave you voice messages all the time?
Yeah, sure they do.
Many government research operations and most federal office buildings. So Dirksen and Kleszczynski will be closed today. However, that being said, federal courts are open. So
what about
if you have
mail?
A federal court case, you will get mail. Social, this is what's open. Social Security,
okay.
Medicare, Medicaid, the post office, the special counsel of Robert Mueller's Russia investigation, that's open.
Sure.
Park, schools, libraries, city government buildings open. Airports, obviously, although we have delays here. Federal prisons, VA hospitals, federal courts. Congress is open, Steve. Federal financial aid, food inspection, and Amtrak all open. And this is what's iffy. Some parks and monuments, some are open, some are closed. The National Zoo Panda Cam, not sure if that's going to be open today. Passport offices. So if you're getting a passport, may not be open today. And military operations and Federal Service Academy athletics.
The Panda Cam.
Panda Cam.
Will be on.
That's an iffy.
Oh, it's iffy.
That's a maybe. That's yeah,
a maybe.
That's a maybe.
Congress is still getting paid.
Yes, they
that's
are.
Right. Congress made a decision that these federal workers wouldn't get paid, but they're still getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's well.
Yes,
that and is. If you called the White House this weekend, there's a recorded line, a comment line. I'm not making this up. This is what you heard.
Thank you for calling the White House. Unfortunately, we cannot answer your call today because congressional Democrats are holding government funding, including funding for our troops and other national security priorities, hostage to an unrelated immigration debate. Due to this obstruction, the government is shut down. In the meantime, you can leave a comment for the president at whitehouse.gov/contact. We look forward to taking your calls as soon as the government reopens.
Okay.
That is not a bit. That's not a bit.
No.
That is the people's house, the White House, the president of the United States, not the president of the Republicans, the president of the United States, in a recording that blames the Democrats and the people's house. You should be pissed about that. That's ridiculous.
Can you imagine the voiceover artist or who that is?
That's what I want to know.
It doesn't sound like Kellyanne Conway, but... Who got the gig to record that?
It's Ivanka's friend, Mindy.
As they hold her hostage.
We'll come back with the headline second. Joe, what's the number at the White House today so we can call and check it out?
The number is
202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. Dial it up yourself anytime today, and let's see if it's any less partisan than the number you just heard. Washington sucks. We don't have to. Keep your texts coming at 312-981-7200. Headlines next.
The reality is that the Democrat minority in the Senate have decided to put politics ahead of their military pay. And I wanted these soldiers to know that we're with them and that we're not going to stand for them.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Vice President Mike Pence. Yesterday, the Trump campaign, yes, there is a campaign fund, put out a commercial saying the Democrats are complicit in any murder committed by an illegal alien. That along with the White House comment line blaming the Democrats. Obviously, you can see it's a balanced approach.
Right.
I talked to David Hochberg, the mortgage genius.
Mm-hmm.
They can't secure new FHA or VA loan numbers right now, so all loans are on hold. VHA and VA loans in process are ready to close, will close, but they can't get IRS tax transcripts from the IRS, so new loans needing transcripts to close, which are needed before the shutdown, can't close. And loans that need transcripts in the IRS to close are also backed up.
Right. That's the whole IRS portion.
Yeah.
Closed. But yeah, you're right. When have you ever gotten a person to talk to there?
So.
Except when you're audited.
So yeah, it's a hot mess on every single level. Ryan Nobles joins us now. And good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Thanks for being
three of the shutdown. Here we go.
Yeah. And Ryan, I was mentioning that unless I get what I want, we're shut down at 8. So we'll see how that works out. You know, you can back this up, but we were talking about this earlier. You don't get into government work to be rich. And the vast majority of the people that work for the federal government who don't get to go to work to get today, wherever they are in the country, really can't afford to lose a day's pay while Congress continues to get paid for being the problem.
That's 100% right. And you mentioned, you know, and it, the situation with mortgages and taxes and stuff. You know, the people that benefit most from government are probably not going to be impacted all that much, but the people that need it the most are the ones that are going to be impacted. And, you know, living where I live in the greater Washington, D.C. area, you know, all my friends that aren't journalists are in some way, shape, or form connected to the federal government. And I was texting friends over the weekend, are you essential or non-essential, which is actually determines whether or not you're going to get paid or not. And some were and some weren't. And there's definitely some anxiety as to how long this is going to last. One day off, maybe that's, you know, like a snow day. It's not going to hurt them all that much. But if it extends into a week or 2 weeks, and I can tell you, having spent all weekend on Capitol Hill, I don't necessarily think this is something that's going to end quickly. I think that, you know, is something that is really, really difficult for people to deal with. You know, yesterday when I was on Capitol Hill right before the Republican conference meeting, this was actually on Saturday morning, Congressman Daryl Issa from California, he's a Republican, he walked up to a Capitol police officer and kind of jokingly said, I'm so glad you're essential, because it meant that he was working
sure.
that day. And the Capitol police officer responded, so is my family.
Right. Well, that's the thing, that right?
Right. I thought that was kind of a stark reality as to what the situation is like.
So we don't even know specifically from the heart of these negotiations what the stalemate is on both sides. We know the generalities from what charming Mitch McConnell said on the Senate floor and what Chuck Schumer said, but you could roll out 2013 tape from Jake Tapper talking to Chuck Schumer saying, oh, this government shutdown, it'd be like someday if I hold the government up for immigration. That's crazy. So, yeah. so while everybody wants the DACA kids to be protected, at least most people do, because it's not their fault, the government's got to run with a budget. And these continuing, constant 3-4 week, 6 week, 8 week Band-Aids are ridiculous.
Yeah, and here's the problem, and I think it's really the problem that Democrats find themselves in, and this isn't taking a partisan side one way or the other, it's just simply talking about the legislative strategy here. The Democrats don't have an easy way out of this. They can't just say to Mitch McConnell, give us this, and then we'll jump on board. Because the things that they are asking for at this point are just way too complicated to fix this problem with one simple piece of legislation that can just get sent back to the House and then passed. What they basically have to ask for now is a promise from Mitch McConnell that, yes, we will do this if you decide to pass a budget and reopen the government. And the sense that I got last night was that Mitch McConnell is telling them, yeah, we'll do that, but reopen the government. And if that happens, they're going to reopen the government, and the plan right now is to do it for just 3 weeks in as opposed to 4 weeks. We're going to be right back to where we were in 3 weeks as to where we are today. And the other thing that Democrats seem to want assurances on is that they want a promise that if they reopen the government, that there will be a piece of legislation on President Trump's desk related to DACA that will be passed into law. And that's just simply a promise that Mitch McConnell cannot make.
Yeah, he can't deliver.
He can get it on the. Yeah, there's 100 senators. There's more than 400 members of Congress. And if you're Paul Ryan, you look at Mitch McConnell and say, sorry, man, I'm sorry you can't get this through, but I've got the votes to continue to pass this without Democratic help. So I just think that the Democrats maybe, to a certain extent, overplayed their hand here because the government continues to be shut down, and I just don't see a way for them to get what they're looking for in any kind of realistic time frame.
And both sides continue to be blind to the fact, because I want to get Andrea in here after the break, continue to be blind to the fact that if either party took the high road and said, in the interest of getting the government back open, we are going to take this step back, neither one seems to understand what a big deal that would be if the American public got to hear it. They're both just being the selfish little babies they continue to be at the expense of everybody else. We'll come back with more with Ryan Nobles in a second.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
7:55. Andrea is here. Say hi to Ryan.
Good
Nobles.
Morning, Ryan. Happy Monday to you.
Hi, Andrea.
Hey,
good morning to you.
I want to. Yeah, thank you. A group of 65 lawmakers signing this letter. This is part of the hashtag Release the Memo campaign, calling on Devin Nunes, the House Intelligence Committee Chairman, to release this memo that they say contains revelations about surveillance abuses on behalf of the government. Do you see that memo being released?
I don't really know, Andrea. This is becoming a growing problem, I think, for both Republicans and Democrats in the Congress, especially those that are hoping for some sort of unedited bipartisan agreement as to the revelation from this Russia investigation. And, you know, it's hard to kind of to make an assessment as to the validity of this memo when nobody's seen it. And the only people that have commented on it come from a pretty ridiculous partisan bend. You know, Democrats have described it as the talking points on the Russia investigation, that basically that Devin Nunes has handpicked certain pieces of information that he's gleaned through different intelligence sources and attempted to put them all together to try and draw some sort of conclusion that isn't really there. But there are a lot of members of Congress that say it's worth getting out to the public so that everybody can see it. This requires the approval of members of the Justice Department and the FBI to sign off on before they send it out because it has classified information. Right now, the FBI does not appear to be inclined to want to get this information out there. So I don't know what the next stage is, whether or not this ever sees the light of day. And if it does see the light of day, if it's actually going to be a worthwhile document or if it's just going to create more of a smokescreen for the Trump administration as they try and find, you know, really get to the bottom of this Russia investigation.
You know, the president's walking, talking core message is, and the Republicans, the hardcore right-wing Republicans in the House particularly, but some in the Senate as well, their message is the FBI's corrupt, Mueller's corrupt, everybody's out to get me, the Russian thing is a hoax, look at the FISA warrants, look at the fact they were trying to get me, it's all Hillary. Look, point being, if Nunes had anything, the White House should be saying release the memo, because it would back up their argument.
Yeah, that's true, but I also wonder if this is a strategic game by the White House and by the president to say to try and stay out of it and at least make it appear that they're above the fray so that when the memo does come out, if it does come out, they can say, look, we had nothing to do with this. And I think that there may be some back-channel pressure being put on the Justice Department and then by extension the FBI to say, let's get this out there, you know, let's help us. So I wonder if the president is thinking it doesn't actually do me any good to be vocal about the release of this memo, because if it does come out, then it won't look like I was pressuring people to get it out there. Now, generally, the president doesn't necessarily hold that level of restraint when it comes to something like this.
Or that level of strategy.
Yeah, but I do think the key player in all of this is Christopher Wray, the FBI director.
Right.
This is a guy that's pretty widely respected across the board by both Republicans and Democrats, and is thought to be somebody that is not partisan in any way, shape, or form. And he's got a pretty tough decision here, because I think it's pretty clear that Jeff Sessions wouldn't mind, you know, getting kind of back in the president's good graces by trying to get this out there, where Ray is probably going to be the definitive factor. So this is going to be an interesting thing to play out, because, the thing that worries me the most about it is I think that the memo is going to come out, and it's not going to be some sort of definitive thing that is going to shed all this light on the situation, but it's going to become such a partisan tool that both sides are going to use to try and draw some sort of conclusion about the investigation. And at the end of the day, it really won't be all that productive.
It's a big pot of ridiculous. You're back on the Hill at noon, I would assume?
I actually have today off. When you work a 14-hour day,
government shutdown?
You can take them, but yes.
Solidarity?
Yes. I'll be back on Tuesday, though.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, man.
Well, I'm dealing right now with 5 out of the 6 members of my house dealing with some sort of the flu.
Fine.
If you've ever been to the prescription counter with an order of Tamiflu, you need to take out a second loan for that. Mm-hmm. So it's not a cheap thing. So we're hoping that we can survive this for the next couple of days and get everybody healthy back in this house.
Are you the lone survivor?
Yeah, sole survivor so far?
So far, I have not hit it. I felt terrible for my 8-year-old last night. She was in so much pain, and she was so upset. And I just said, "Honey, I'll just cuddle you and help you get to sleep." She said, "Daddy, I don't want you to get it."
What a sweet kid!
Right now.
What a sweet kid!
I just want her to feel better. She's a good kid.
Listen, if you need cash, just tell Wolf I said to give it to you.
All right.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Stay
so
healthy. Ryan Nobles at Flu House. It's 8 o'clock. We come back with the news and Dean after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Kiss me good.
8:13 live to Channel 9 of Dean, and thanks to everybody, Dean, that came out Saturday night to the Metropolis in Arlington Heights.
You're
we had
welcome.
A great time.
You're welcome.
Oh,
it was great.
Yeah, you weren't there. We had a great time. It's a great show.
Much fun.
A lot of people in the lobby afterwards coming up saying nice things.
That was me in the lobby saying nice things.
And there were a couple people that came up and said, well, more than a couple, several people that came up and said, we really like you and Dean. You're idiots.
Thank you.
That's sweet.
Nicest compliment possible.
Now, in addition to that, on Friday, Andre and I, amongst many others, attended Milt Rosenberg's memorial service at the University of Chicago. By the way, if you've not taken the time to just walk through the University of Chicago campus, through the quad area.
Yes.
It's just beautiful.
I would highly recommend doing it in the summertime or the spring and not when it's 30 degrees and the wind whipping
up. It's funny. I grew up around Cornell University in upstate New York, and I spent nothing but time on that campus as a kid. Never went there to class, but played sports and things there. Played a lot of ball there. And it's just got that old Ivy League feel.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just a beautiful
place. And the chapel where they had it, the Bond Chapel, not the big Rockefeller
Great
chapel.
Great little chapel.
Wonderful and beautiful with the stained glass.
So,
chapel.
Dean,
I grew up around there. So
I know you did.
When we were kids, we used to go. We certainly did not go to the Ivy League yet. Anything.
Didn't go in the classrooms,
in
right?
our family, but we used to go ice skating on the Midway there. And so we were constantly down by U of C. And I did go to, when I was about 10 years old, I went to an organ recital. Don't ask me why, but I remember at Rockefeller Chapel, and I was just completely blown away.
Have you been to Bond Chapel?
I don't think I ever
have.
It is
nice.
Tiny.
It is, yeah.
Very small, but this beautiful chapel, and they're all old buildings,
it's
one of the older
place.
Buildings on campus. But anyway, so there are 11 speakers, Dean, 11.
Yes.
Every one of them, Nobel Prize winner or a Pulitzer Prize winner,
yes.
all of them.
Yes.
I said this earlier. It was like a cage match of smart people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, one got up and then the next guy got up and said, here's a quote you didn't say.
Right.
Here's
no
study
notes.
You didn't cite.
Right. No notes. They're quoting from Shakespeare.
Milt would have loved it.
Yep.
Loved it. The last person that spoke was Alex Trebek, and he formed his entire speech in the form of a question.
Wow.
You know, the second to last person, though, his grandson.
He's great.
Wow.
Yeah, he's great.
Oh, my gosh.
His grandson told a great story. His grandson's from Seattle, and he said, I sort of have a reputation of being difficult and interrupting and being a bit of a know-it-all and speaking my mind on everything, whether you asked or not. So he said when Justin Coffin had the show on Milt's life, he's out in Seattle with his buddies. He's a musician as well, and they're going to play a gig, and they're listening to GN as they're driving to this gig, and there was a pause, and one of his friends looks at the grandson and goes, oh, I guess I see where you got it.
Right? It was cute. Dean, he started telling a note about a story about how he is into music because of his grandfather, because of Milt, and he said he started playing the piano at a young age, and I thought, oh, I can relate. But then he went on to say he plays the guitar and the clarinet and the mandolin and pretty much every instrument that's out there. Mm-hmm. That went out the window.
So, a nice tribute to Milt.
Did you go to Valois afterwards on 53rd Street?
We did not. Should we have?
Well, it's the best. The old-fashioned cafeteria style you know, place. President Obama used to go there, famously would go there for breakfast all the time. Diner, you get a tray, you know, keep moving on the counter. Don't stop the traffic.
It's like the soup Nazi?
A little bit. They're nicer than that, but you get like a great meatloaf, good sandwich, good corned beef sandwich. It's a great place, legendary place.
You know, one of the things that came up during the service from a couple of people that spoke was the fact that Milt would give quizzes to his potential producers in like two or three different levels before they were hired. And his grandson mentioned that as well. But I was talking to somebody afterwards, and I brought this up on stage Saturday night. You could come into this building and you could say, Milt, beautiful day. And he'd go, yes, but can you tell me? Who was the ancient Greek god of the sun?
Yes.
No, Mel, I can't. I'm going.
That's one we could answer, actually. So it'd be.
Yeah. So anyway, nice tribute to Milt and good memories.
Just on that front, a lot of our listeners will remember weatherman John Coleman from Channel 7 back in the day. From, you know, it's like the happy-go-lucky, funny, wacky weatherman.
Started the Weather Channel, right?
And started the Weather Channel, but he passed away over the weekend as well.
He had to be close to 90 himself, wouldn't he?
He was born in 1934, according to robertfeeder.com. So what would that make
83.
Him? 83. Like, 83, something
83,
like that.
83, 84, yeah. Or as Orion likes to call it, young.
Right.
Kid.
We'll come back. Hall & Oates tour announced. The SAG Awards from last night, of course. The pay disparity dispute. Should Nicole Kidman have been hugging people and then announced that she had the flu?
Right. It's the first thing I thought of when she said that.
New stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And, of course, the big question is Pat Tomasulo's first show and Dean's vicious review. coming up in just seconds.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9 720.
All right, back to Dean at Channel 9. Dean Andrea covered the women's march this weekend.
Yes.
He is a critic. And I don't know if this is this weekend, but I did see a very funny sign.
Mm-hmm.
Super callous, fragile, racist, sexy, Nazi POTUS.
Very clever sign.
Not bad. What's the funniest one you saw, Andrea, that you can say?
All right, the funniest one I saw.
That you can say.
That I can say, at least to me, this was the most creative. It said, at least Fredo could manage a casino.
Oh very nice.
Just because
very
it was different. Nice. Because honorable mention, you had grab him by the poles.
Sure, yeah.
Run like a woman.
Well, that's good. Election thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Karma's a bitch.
Uh-huh.
And she votes. And, of course, the still here, still nasty, still voting. But the one I can't say, Steve.
Write it down.
All right.
Write
well,
it
I can say
me.
It up until the one
well, let
point.
Me sit. Let me see it. Hand
right.
it to me.
Can you read my writing? All the way on the right.
Let's see here, Dean. Keep your laws and the president's tiny, grabby hands off our blank.
I think I know what that word is.
Yeah. I don't think you could fill it in. I don't think you do.
If I was playing match game right now, we would win.
Don't.
But
don't.
Very creative signs. Huge march. 300,000 women and men and children.
Yeah, and Chicago had an increase.
Yeah, we had number two.
How about that? Pat Tomasulo show. I understand you hated it.
That's not true at all.
Oh, that's not true.
That's not true at all.
Did you see it?
I did see it.
And?
I watched it. You know, Bozo was on...
I heard that rumor.
Yeah, Bozo was featured
and
on the first
Bozo
episode.
Bozo was assaulted by one of the people that were on the show.
Pat did a feature talking to people who always wanted to get on the Bozo show through the years. And, you know, there was a 10-year waiting list, so a lot of people didn't get tickets. But he talked to some people who, you know, it's stayed with them all these years.
How it impacted their lives. Very funny idea.
They couldn't get on the Bozo show, and so he invited them on the show. You know, and talk to them and then surprise them when Bozo came out from backstage. And one of the guys, a rather large, muscular man, grabbed Bozo and lifted him off the ground.
Bozo, and bounced him.
Yeah, Bozo telling me confidentially almost cracked his ribs.
After all those years, wouldn't that be sad if you broke Bozo's
some
ribs?
Some guy kills Bozo. Gets waits to see
do you
him.
Know, do you know, do you, Dean, this is going to change how you feel about Joe Romano, because I know you're not a fan. Joe Romano, the associate producer here on the program. Joe,
What's up,
Joe,
buddy?
Saw the Bozo Show live. Joe was on the Bozo Show.
Yeah, my godfather, my Uncle Mike, took me when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah, see, some people, I mean, you know, it's not like we're, you know, putting fake people in the stands.
Fake Bozo! Trump says it all the time.
People were...
I was like two seats away from being on Bozo Buckets.
Oh, see, yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. I was chosen as a girl, Steve, when the tips and tips only of the magic arrows would scan the audience. And
yeah.
It stop, you know, would stop on a kid.
Yeah.
And if you were, you know, if they were looking for a boy and you were a boy, then you got to play or girl. And when they were looking for a girl, the arrow stopped on me. So I was not allowed to play. But technically, that was my first time on WGN in fourth grade.
Right. Did you say at that point you were transitioning just so you could play the Buckets game?
Transitioning not so popular back then.
Yeah, I suppose. Newest stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, there's a bunch of them that are going to be inducted today, including, talk about, you know, gender equality and, and mismanagement, really. Minnie Mouse is getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame today.
Oh, Minnie!
But let me just say, how long have Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse been around?
1,000 years.
Like 80 years, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure Mickey's been on the Walk of Fame for years.
So you're saying there's mouse fame inequality?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Minnie has the hashtag Me Too pin.
Minnie Too.
Mickey right. got his star in 1978.
Oh, please.
Look how long it took
so
Mickey.
Long.
It's called mouse-crimination.
Mouse-crimination.
There you go.
Jack Black is getting a star today. Mark Hamill. Nick Nolte. Somebody please tell him that he's supposed to be there. And the original TV Wonder Woman, Linda Carter.
Oh, I love Linda Carter.
Jack Black's a nice guy, but... okay, so Tracy Ellis Ross. Tracy Ellis Ross.
What's up with that?
Speaking of the pay dispute.
What's up with the Jack Black?
I'm not a huge fan. I like him as a guy. He's a good dude. Tracy.
But you hate him?
I hate him more than you hated the Pat Thomas-Segal show. No, I don't hate him. Tracy Ellis Ross on the Blackish pay disparity, like she doesn't make as much as Anthony Anderson?
Well, that's what was alleged by the Hollywood Reporter, which is an industry publication. They had a piece out saying that Tracy Ellis Ross was threatening to boycott the show if she didn't get the same amount of money as Anthony Anderson.
True or not true?
She, over the weekend, said that she was never even contacted by the Hollywood Reporter. Fake news. According to her. And she said she never threatened to leave. And they specifically asked her, what about the pay gap? And she didn't respond to that. But did say that she wants to be compensated in a way that matches her contribution to the show.
Yeah, to pay me fairly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. The Hall & Oates tour.
This was just announced a few minutes ago. This is hot off the press. Hall & Oates is going to be coming to Chicago to do a tour here at the United Center on May 18th.
Private eyes.
With the group Train.
Watching you.
With the group Train.
On the other side of the street, I knew.
There you go. All right. Okay. I knew one of you would know a Train
Sarah
song.
Sarah.
I can't go for that. No, can do. Tickets are going to go May 18th. Did I say that? United Center.
Drops of Jupiter. I can't remember the tune.
Tickets are go on sale. I think that was.
This is not a drive-by.
I think you may be singing Simon and Garfunkel songs now.
San Francisco made me do it. That was some of them there, too.
Tickets go on sale a week from today.
Train's a great man. SAG Awards last night. Your thoughts?
I thought it was an okay show.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
It was, I mean, SAG, this Screen Actors Guild Awards. These are actors that are awards that are given to actors by actors, strictly performance, not the overall movie production, blah blah blah. Just acting.
Did you vote? I voted.
Performances. I did.
I was 5 for 15, I believe.
Oh wow!
Didn't do well.
That's a terrible record.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't count how I did, but I'm going to say I got them all 100%.
That seems fair.
Yeah. Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri was essentially Best Picture. Their Best Picture equivalent is Best Cast Ensemble.
Yep.
And the acting in Three Billboards is beyond reproach. It's it's amazing. Frances McDormand.
She's a nut.
She won Best Actor.
Oh my God.
She does seem to be a little bit marching to her own beat.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Rockwell, who also seems to be marching to his own beat, won Best Supporting Actor.
But it seems like the party in his ears, between his ears, is more fun.
Completely.
Seems like the party in Francis McDormand's head is everybody's being yelled at and told to go home.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and here, drink this Kool-Aid.
I'm all for individuality, but boy, her wardrobe is curious, to say the least.
Her wardrobe and her wacky hair. Uh-huh. And her...
So Andrea hates her more than Julianne Moore.
No, I do like her a lot.
Just, I'm told you dislike her as much as Dean disliked the Pat Tomasulo show.
Oh, that much, huh, Dean?
Not dislike the Pat Tomasulo show.
Oh, here she comes. Watch out, boy.
Gary Oldman continues his winning charge to the Oscars, taking Best Actor. Allison Janney won Best Supporting Actress, continuing her charge toward the Oscars. All of the presenters last night were women.
I love that.
Almost all of them spoke about Me Too or Time's Up.
How about James Franco showing up, considering all the talk about him?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of people are saying he's got a lot of nerve to show up.
I don't know if it's nerve or chutzpah or, it's my award show, too. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that.
He's denied the allegations. So I'm not saying he's, telling the truth or not telling the truth. But in his mind, I'm thinking... He says he didn't do anything, so why should he not show up?
Aziz Ansari was not there. He was out on another bad date with someone. He's waiting for that blog to come out. Some of the stuff you have to do your homework on, kids.
Two of my favorite things, you'd mentioned that Nicole Kidman is hugging and kissing everybody at the table.
With the flu. Yeah.
And then goes up on stage to get her award. And says that she's got the flu. Thank you for getting everybody sick.
I immediately thought they better Purell the microphone.
The other thing that I really enjoyed was when Morgan Freeman...
That was great.
...was getting his Lifetime Achievement Award, and he begins speaking, and he was distracted by somebody in the very front, at the very front table.
Who was that, Dean?
It was... Well, we don't know exactly, but it was... He was looking at the Blackish table. Anthony Anderson, Tracy
I thought
Alex
it was somebody
Ross.
On their phone that he was annoyed by, but that
he,
wasn't
he
it?
He was annoyed by somebody was talking while he was talking.
Yeah.
And he said, excuse me, I'm talking. Yeah, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you. So he called him out on it. We just never saw exactly who it was that
The amazing thing
out.
About that, and I love Morgan Freeman, but the amazing thing about that was Rita Moreno did the presentation, the presenting. Ask me how old Rita Moreno is. Mm. Ask me.
How old is Rita Moreno?
86.
She looks amazing. Fantastic.
She looks unbelievable. Mm-hmm. She makes Jane Fonda look like a hag.
It's true. She looks good.
She looks unbelievable. Crazy how good she looks. All right, Dean. Well, I'm sorry I didn't like Pat's show, but maybe next week.
I did not say that.
Well, we got a text here from the 847. This is outrageous to me. A text from the 847. It's called the grand prize game, not Bozo Buckets. How dare you question Dean on clown knowledge?
That's right.
How dare you?
Did you even bring up the buckets?
I always called it Bozo Buckets as a kid.
No, Joe did. Dean is professor of clownology.
A lot of people do call it the buckets. I've stopped correcting people because it's...
Dean, I'm sorry. There's the outlandish in anyone who
questions. But at the beginning of the episode, Mr. Ned, Ringmaster Ned, would say, it's time to play our grand prize game.
There you go.
So that's the there's shut up.
815. The Pat Tomasulo show was awkward. I wanted to punch him in his beady eyes.
Oh,
if you didn't like it, that's fine. But don't be hitting people. All right, I thought we got a lot done today, Dean.
I do too. We've learned what a lot of people hate today. Happy Monday, everyone.
That's right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye bye.
All right, that's Dean. We're back with the headlines in just a moment. More inaccurate information from Joe, but stand by for that. First this.
Third down and 10. And Foles able to get away and throw. Pass is caught. Jeffrey, touchdown.
Ditka.
Well, it's coming. Right now. Right for us at 22,000 miles an hour.
Ditka.
Not a soul on earth can hide from
it. The Steve Cochran Show now welcomes Mike Ditka.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what.
The best Bears conversation is right now on 720 WGN.
Well, Ham brought it up this morning. The Eagles could be a nice template for the Bears. As the Eagles make the Super Bowl, the question is, what do you do with Tom Brady? Old nine-fingered Tom Brady. considering what he did yesterday. Dan, what's the one thing that jumped out for you yesterday from either game? The one thing that your walk-away impression?
Just really how disappointing Minnesota's defense was. Once they got down, I mean, Minnesota had the best defense in the NFC all year, and you did not see that yesterday. I think that's the one thing that, and obviously Philadelphia was impressive, but I don't think they're 31 points better than Minnesota.
Oh, I don't think so either. And the thing that disappointed me about the Vikings is they got down by 3 touchdowns and they quit.
Yeah.
They quit covering. They quit. And then they got chippy, you know, and started to mix it up.
They got frustrated.
So that's a discipline problem on that team.
And I think Jacksonville, too, with the penalties, and I know they weren't happy about the disparity. I mean, one penalty on New England, and I think they were 10 for 98 yards on Jacksonville, but they came at bad times. I mean, they really, really hurt themselves with those penalties.
Well, but in defense of the refs, I mean, have you ever tried to get out of a game in Boston if you're not popular?
Yeah, it's tough.
And it's dangerous.
It's tough. Yeah.
So it's Philadelphia and the New England Patriots back in Minnesota. That's got to suck on a lot of levels. First, your team misses the Super Bowl.
I know. That was the first thing.
And now you got to welcome the team that beat them and the other team.
I was thinking about that all during the second half of that game. This is just, these guys are going to get on a plane tonight and go back to Minneapolis.
Right.
And the signs at the airport, I mean, they won't go through the terminal, obviously, but it's going to be, welcome to the home of Super Bowl 52. Sorry you guys aren't in it.
It's like your ex married the hot young one and is bringing her to your house.
Yeah, exactly. I think.
It's not good.
No.
It's not good. It's not good. What's the story on Ditka? Is Ditka not available? Because we played his fancy introduction. Let's go live to Joe on this. Joe, what do we know?
We are calling him back right now. He should be good to go in just a minute.
Ah, great. Okay. Well, let's do this then. Let's get a preview of what's coming up at 9 o'clock from Steve.
Steve, the Senate is scheduled. He forgot his phone in the car, so he had to go and get it.
Oh, okay. All right. That's probably more information than I needed, but thank you for being thorough.
He's coming.
The coach is standing by. Coach, when did you play in Philadelphia? What years was that?
Oh, I played there. I played with the Bears from 61 through 66, 67 to 68. And then I went to the Cowboys in 69, 70, 71, 72. And then I retired.
That field used to be a nightmare in the old place, right? It was like concrete or something?
Yeah, and it was tough back then. We weren't very good, boy, and they called them the Boo Birds. But I'll tell you what, they got a great fan base. They really support the Eagles, but back then they didn't. But then again, there was a reason. We weren't very good. We played in Franklin Field some of the time. That's where the University of Pennsylvania played.
So being a Pennsylvania kid, did they give you any break, or did they boo you just as loud?
Oh, they booed me just as well, and sometimes probably more.
Right. Let them have it. All right, so a surprise to me, certainly, that Minnesota didn't compete better. You know, you get down by a touchdown, you get down by 2 or even 3 scores. The game's not over. I did not like the way they comported themselves in the second half. There was some give up in the Vikings, and that was disappointing to see.
Yeah, I can't explain why that happens. I mean, I think the Vikings had a right to be there. They earned a right to be there. They're a good football team. They just got it taken to them. I mean, you can say anything you want to say. I don't think there's any way on any given Sunday they could have beaten the Eagles, and the Eagles just kicked their butt. Now, maybe if they were home, it would have been different, but I doubt it. I mean, the Eagles are I think the Eagles proved one thing, to me anyways. I mean, this is a much better football team, I think, than anybody really thought it was. You know, you're playing with your backup quarterback, and you look like you haven't missed the beat. I mean, they got receivers you really don't hear a lot about, but it gets you the ball. Got a great tight end and Ertz. It's a good football team.
Mike, what about Jacksonville? Do you think they've got staying power? Is that a team, unless they find a little more offensive firepower, despite a really good defense, can they have the kind of success next year they had this year?
I don't see why not. I mean, when you really look at them, I think Bortles is a pretty good quarterback. They run the ball very well. The kid's a good running back. I mean, there's a lot of things you do. You know, it comes down to one or two plays here or there. We've seen that all along. And, you know, Jacksonville's going to be a good team, and I think they're going to be a good team for a while.
We hear a lot about coaching trees in the NFL. Doug Peterson, the coach at Philadelphia, played for Andy Reid as a quarterback. Then he coached under Reid, both in Philly and Kansas City. You came from the Tom Landry, and I guess George Halas coaching tree, but later in your career, Tom Landry, before you became a head coach. You had a number of your players who went on to become head coaches in the NFL, Mike Singletary and Jeff Fisher and Ron Rivera. What is it that, as either a player or an assistant coach, that you're able to learn from a head coach that enables you to go on and become a head coach yourself and maybe adopt some of those principles?
Well, I think I was fortunate being with the Cowboys. It finished my career there. I was on my way out. He gave me a second chance. I went down there. And then after playing for 4 years for the Cowboys, we won a Super Bowl. I was in the nightclub business with some people, and one day he called me in, and they said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Good." He said, "How's the business?" I said, "It does good." And he said, "Have you ever thought of being a coach?" And I said, "Well, I hadn't thought a lot about it." And he said, "Well, what do you think about coaching our tight ends and the special teams?" And this is Coach Landry. And wow, I mean, I didn't know what to say. You know, I was. I thought I was going to become a millionaire in the club business. And so I said, well, let me think about it. So I got in the car, and I thought about it for about 5 seconds. And I called him back, and I said, "Coach, I'll take that job." And it's the greatest thing I've ever, because I had a chance to learn from one of the all-time greats.
Sure.
Tom Landry, not only a coach, but a man. I mean, his quality, his character, his quality of life, the way he lived his life, and he was disciplined, and he taught, you know, that stuff sinks in if you're around it enough. And it sunk in with me. And I became not only a pretty good coach, assistant coach, but I became a better person for it. And I think there's got to be growth in life. And that's where my growth really started.
How about that? That's a good story. It's a very good story. All right, we'll let you go on this. Jacksonville goes away. And New England plays another day. Nobody's shocked. Nobody's surprised. You got 2 weeks for Tom Brady, the greatest of all time's paw to heal. The Eagles playing their best football game. Can they beat the New England Patriots?
Oh, yeah. They can be beat. Anybody can be beat. It's not going to be easy. Well, you got to understand, if you look at the history of the NFL, in the whole history, and I don't care who you're talking about, Steelers, anybody, nobody's had a run like they've had. Bill Belichick and what they've done up in New England is incredible. It really is. And they turn these people over and they keep doing it. Yeah, they did it. Yeah, Brady's outstanding. I don't think people really give him enough credit for. He might be as good a passer as I've ever seen. I mean, you talk about pinpoint accuracy. He's a great athlete, but the coaching, the organization up there might be the best ever in football, and the record shows it.
Coach, great talking to you. We'll hook up before the Super Bowl. We'll get your pick. In the meantime, enjoy your day.
All right. Take care. God bless.
There you go. That's the coach, Mike Ditka. Joe, you have any other information on Coach, or are we good?
We're good.
Can you imagine if he didn't call Tom Landry back and take the job, how history would have changed?
Yeah, he would have been like the Studio 54 guy. Right? Mike Ditka with his shirt unbuttoned to his navel.
Why don't you ask him? Is he still on hold?
No, but Joe knows where he is at all times. Joe actually shot the coach with a tranquilizer dart so he can track him at all times. It's 9 o'clock. CLTV joins us, and we're back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Somehow he found a hole in the equipment of Connor Hellebuck, and that one slipped through. Ruta scores, and Anthony Duclair will pick up his first point as a Blackhawk.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Wow, Saturday night was ugly. It's frustrating. The team knows they're better than this. The organization knows they're better than this. And the guys are having a good time. You know, they're playing like they like each other. They like each other. If they're playing like they like each other. But they got to get it fixed. And one of the guys that gets part of the pressure for this is Anthony Duclair. We haven't even had a chance to welcome him to town yet. You know what I feel like, Anthony? It's one of those things where I wish it was under different circumstances. But I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dave, say hi.
Anthony, good morning. So you've been in town for, what, a total of three games now with the Blackhawks, or three or four games. And so you've kind of had a chance to see what life is like around this team. When the trade was made with Arizona, obviously you find out you're going to Chicago, you have to be excited, right? What was your initial reaction when you found out about the deal?
I was really excited, obviously, slash future coming with Arizona. At the same time, I wasn't expecting to come here, but once I came here, I was really excited. And I was actually on a trip back from Mexico, and I found out as soon as I landed in Phoenix. So, I gave a call to Stan and John and my agent, and it was just a great day for myself.
You know, I didn't ask anybody about this previously, Connor or anybody. What's it like playing hockey in Phoenix? I mean, I'm sure you've got that core group that comes out all the time. But beyond the core group, is hockey getting hotter there?
I think so. I mean, I actually feel a difference from my first year to this year. You know, just more kids at the rink, and hockey is it's getting really popular. I think it's growing in the desert, and obviously it's not one of the big markets like Chicago, but it's definitely growing year by year, and you can definitely feel it, you know, in the local hockey rinks and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a great place to play. Obviously, the weather is unbelievable, but I think it really is growing.
Well, it's a little bit different when you come to Chicago and you walk into the United Center. Your first impression when you walked into the dressing room and all of a sudden you look around and you're a member of the Blackhawks.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I've watched some of these guys play when I was a kid, and you know, it's just a great feeling to be coming near to original six team and such a, you know, first class organization. You know, as a visiting team, coming into United Center, you're always pumped to play the Blackhawks. And, I mean, it's such a great atmosphere here with the fans. And obviously, the national anthem. So to be part of this organization means the world to me. And I obviously don't want to take this opportunity for granted.
So you guys are struggling in Arizona. And you know, nobody likes to lose. But you come here with an expectation to win and an expectation to, you know, help this team turn this thing around, because I don't know if you noticed, Anthony, we don't like losing around here.
Yeah, I feel that. I know that firsthand coming from Montreal. I mean, they got the same pressure there, the Canadians. So, really happy to be, you know, playing some meaningful games here in Arizona. I haven't made the playoffs since I was there. So, just to be in that playoff hunt, you know, it's a great feeling. And, you know, every game means so much. So, you want to make sure that you show up every night and make sure you get the win.
The role you're going to play on the team, as you understand it, primarily is what?
I guess an offensive role. I've always been an offensive guy all my life. And from being put in that position, playing with Taze and Saad, so, and also getting some power play time. So I want to make sure that I play to my strengths. You know, play with speed and hold on to the puck and make some plays offensively.
Saturday was your first time playing with that top line. Your initial impressions of playing with Taves and Saad?
Yeah, it's just a lot of speed, a lot of skill. Still getting used to the system here, but I'm getting the hang of it. And just a lot of talk at the bench from those two guys, and it goes a long way. Obviously, they've been in the league for a while, the great leaders. I just want to try to keep up with them.
You have any sense of anything going on with the team that, you know, it's kind of tough to ask you because you just got here, but a chemistry thing or a bump in the road kind of thing, or is it just you guys are in a rough patch here?
Just a rough patch, I think. I mean, a good team goes through it. At the same time, there's too much talent and skill.
Right.
And, you know, and in this locker room for to not make the playoffs, in my opinion. That was just from the outside looking in. And I see it even more when I'm part of the team. So we'll figure it out. I trust in the system. I trust in these guys here. that we will figure it out.
It's the newest hawk. I think that's right, Dave. We haven't snuck anybody else in under the radar, have
no,
we?
No, Anthony is the last new player acquisition. As the players come up, Gustafson came up from Rockford, but in terms of a new player on the team.
I have nothing but faith in you guys, Anthony, and I know you're going to get this turned around, but we can't wait a whole lot longer, and I don't mean that as fans. I mean, there's too many teams in front, as you well know, and even though 5 points out of the playoffs is not the end of the world, there's a lot of teams to climb over, so we got to get on a run here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, division is really tough here. There's a lot of big teams. And you look at a team like Colorado, and you're going to run like that, and they come from last to first. Anything can happen. So we want to make sure that we show up every night to the end of the season.
James Ridgway from Illinois asked the MB Financial Bank Breakfast of the Blackhawk question of the day, and that is this. What do you do in between periods? What do the guys on the team do in between periods? What's the routine?
I mean, we like to talk amongst ourselves. Obviously, communication is key until Coach Q comes about 4 or 5 minutes before getting out there. But we get back in the room, and we have sort of our own routine, either tape our sticks or light on or whatnot. But most primarily, we like to reflect on the period before.
Kind of talk about who's doing what out there and helping the guys out from one to another?
Yeah, exactly. Whether it's between line mates or just a quick speech from the captain to the whole team, we like to reflect on what we've done good and what we've done bad, and a couple of things that we like to improve on.
Where'd you grow up?
In Montreal.
So Phoenix, a lot like Montreal this time of year.
I'm used to the cold weather here, so it's not a big change.
No, this is probably warm for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Great talking to you. We're excited that you're here. We know you guys are going to get this fixed, but, Anthony, I'm not getting any younger, so let's get this done.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Thanks.
Appreciate you being on. Anthony Duclair, latest member of the Chicago Blackhawks. They are going to get it fixed, but let's go.
Yeah, there's 36 games left, so you can't wait too long.
So,
And it's the schedule. Schedule's not, it's not supposed to be easy, but it's not easy. You got Tampa Bay tonight.
And 7:30. And you think of a guy, and you'll hear it here, obviously.
Yes.
And you think of a guy like Anthony, who's new to the team and has never played for Coach Q or for John McDonough. They're both like, is it the Hulk? You won't like me when I'm angry. Was that the Hulk? Or is it the Ewoks from the Star Wars thing? No, that was Don't Feed
Ewoks.
Them After Midnight.
Oh,
that was
the Gremlins.
That was the Gremlins.
Yeah. Oh, the Gremlins.
Yeah.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah.
Listen, Q and McDonough, you won't like them when they're angry. So let's go, boys.
I think
let's get it together.
You know, he was in New York with the Rangers with Ulf Samuelson, who's now an assistant coach.
That's right.
So I have a feeling he probably gave him a little advanced intelligence on what to expect from Coach Q.
And John?
And probably from John, too.
Yeah, there you go. They want to win, and they expect to win, and that's what the fans
That's how it's supposed to be.
Expect. Hey, sponsored by MB Financial Bank, that's Breakfast with the Blackhawks. Sandberg's temperature that she sleeps at her house at is 64 degrees.
I can't feel my fingers anymore. I lied. They're numb.
Now, unless you're hanging beef, I don't know that you need to have 64 degrees.
Maybe you should wear these extra gloves. My hands are starting to get sweaty.
Why are you trying to get Vladimir Putin to come by? 64?
You've had this pair of extra gloves this whole time?
Yeah. We're in the Rockies.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
It is 9:26. The Steve Cochran Show continues. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, show number 1072 at Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. We're going to Vegas. You heard Anthony Duclair a little bit ago. We're going to go to Vegas for Valentine's Day.
Yes.
We're going to go out and do the show there with Justin Kaufman, the night of the Hawks and the Golden Knights game.
Yes.
That will be on the 13th. We'll do the warm-up leading up to the pregame, about a 90-minute thing with Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning we'll be on with Pete doing this show.
That'll be great.
Hit the jackpot with your Blackhawk snapshot. And by snapshot, I don't mean like a really fast wrist shot. I mean an actual snapshot.
Photograph.
A picture.
Mm-hmm.
Showing that you're nuts for the Hawks.
These pictures are fantastic, the ones we're getting.
Yeah, we've got a lot in, but it doesn't mean you can't win. It doesn't mean you can't win.
And you're going to renew vows, too, on Valentine's Day, hopefully, right? Of some people. Yeah, Rob, we better remind you of that.
Renew vows. I've got to find that email.
That's going to be fun, though. And you could play some table games?
Just a private message now to a listener.
Okay.
If you sent me an email about you being in Vegas and wanting your vows renewed, and you were concerned I might lose the email, I can't find it. So I resend it.
When you renew vows or when you, you marry people, do you wear like the traditional garb?
Well, it's interesting you might ask that because I did a wedding in Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
And the wedding I did in Minneapolis was for a friend of my daughter's. And that wedding was done in a church, mm-hmm. a non-denominational church. And the very nice pastor from the non-denominational church, I remember this vividly, prior to the wedding, about an hour before the wedding, asked if I would be wearing my robe and vestments.
Yes, your vestments.
I said, no, I'm going to go with what I have on.
Going to go with the blazer and the...
I didn't show her my card from the Universal Life Church that I have in my wallet.
You have a card, right? You have to get a card.
I'm ordained.
Is it laminated?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get special parking.
So again, will you bring your vestments to Vegas?
No.
For this vow renewal?
No.
Okay.
No, but you can pick up a robe and vestments anywhere in Vegas.
Right?
Please. Joe, now you got ordained for, Joe Romano, you got ordained for what?
To marry my sisters.
And
hey-o.
Both of them?
Not to each other. Yeah. What?
I don't know. It's like an Ed McMahon moment. You're not old enough to know who Ed McMahon is.
Yeah.
So they're younger?
They're older than me.
And they both got married?
Yep, in the same year.
And they're not necessarily tied to a specific church?
Nope.
So they asked you to do it. Were you nervous?
A little nervous for the first one.
Yeah, second one, breeze.
Oh, easy as a breeze, baby.
Because what you have to do is you have to ask questions. You have to get to know the couple.
Right.
You have to tell a little personal story.
Ah, that's right.
It's not as simple
as... It's
dangerous
when it's your sister.
Well, he's in trouble either way.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, especially as a little brother.
Do you do the storytelling before the exchanging of the rings,
you know,
and that stuff?
Yes.
The order, there's a specific order to it, but generally you want to get the content to the ceremony, the fluff up front before you get to the serious stuff, and that's the ring and the final declaration.
Got it.
The vows can go ahead of the content.
Because I remember you married a couple on Valentine's Day in the past. We were on a remote. Anna DeVellantis and I were the...
Oh, yeah. Are they still married?
They are still married,
okay,
yeah.
Good.
But I forgot if you told the stories first and then got to the nuts and bolts.
It opens with the why we're gathered here today,
mm-hmm.
and then a little something-something about each of them. Could be something about how they met, some romantic little ditty. Could be a funny story about the two of them. Could be something she finds adorable about him mm-hmm. that she won't in a few years. That type of thing.
Right.
And then Joe, I mean, you're a fellow professional, Joe, so you can tell me if you do this differently. But once you finish with the stories up front, then you have the option to jump to the vows. Now, there could be a reading in there. Now, I did one wedding, and I'm not kidding about this. The reading was a Dr. Seuss reading.
Really?
Yes.
Was it the places you'll go?
I don't remember. I just remember I found it amusing. So the groom did a Dr. Seuss reading.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, she seemed to like it okay. And by the way, that's the only divorce I've had.
Is that true?
Yeah. I think I'm 9 for 10 or 10 for 11, something like that.
Because you know, was it you? Was it the Dr. Seuss reading?
I don't know. Well, I do know, but no, it doesn't seem to be the case.
Do you ever like play the newlywed game where you ask the bride and the groom like questions about each other?
Strangest place you've ever done it.
Well, I wasn't thinking about that necessarily.
During the ceremony? Dave.
You remember the answer to that?
Yes.
That newlywed outtake? Newlywed game outtake?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because she thought it was a location on her body instead of a location
place
where they made whoopee, I think was the question, right?
That's it. Strangest place you ever made whoopee.
Made whoopee.
Now, Steve, I don't know if this was the same for you, but the key for me...
Yes,
the,
yes, fellow.
Was the... was remembering who the star of the wedding was, and that's, you know, me. So that's
it's not you. It's about her. And I always take the time to remind the groom that you're just baggage.
Yeah.
You're just the extra. It's a Jerry Seinfeld joke from years ago, but he's right. It's like if at any point the groom goes down, it's no big deal. You stick the next guy in a black tuxedo and you have him step right in.
There you go. Right.
Yeah, it's not your day, dude.
Okay, one more question. So you and Joe are fellow
fellow wedding people,
men of the cloth. If that, so
not really, unless you consider Docker's cloth.
Okay,
you know what
so
I'm saying?
Right. So when you like, if doctors see themselves walking down the street, they'll say, "Hello, doctor. Hello, doctor." How do you and Joe address each other?
I say, "Hey, Joe.
What's up, fool?"
Yeah, that's okay. Pretty much how we do it.
There you go.
Are you the Universal Life Church, Joe?
I believe that is.
What do you believe? How could you not know?
Well, you know.
Do we need some continued training? This is why you youth ministers.
Youth ministers.
You youth ministers are ruining the Universal Life Church. But no, it's a nice thing for people that you may know that don't have a specific church affiliation.
Yes.
That's great. Now, I don't know about you, Joe, because I don't know if you go to church, but I do. And yeah, I'm always concerned about older people who mm-hmm. are attending the wedding, who are, you know, used to a more traditional service.
Yes.
And they're going to think, who's the idiot, you know, up front? And, you know, or it's a disrespectful wedding. So I always encourage the bride and groom to make sure the family understands what type of service you're having here. And then at some point during the service, I do sing Captain and Tennille's famous song, Love Will Keep Us Together.
Oh, that's got to be a treat.
Yeah.
My niece got married this weekend, and she did All You Need Is Love in the middle with the cello and the violin. And everybody laughed during the da-da-da-da-da.
They laughed during All You Need Is Love?
We all laughed during the da-da-da-da-da with the cello. It sounded bizarre.
Well, that's not nice.
It was really
laughed.
Cute. The whole wedding was quirky anyway, so it was kind of interesting.
Laughed.
Yes. Wow. It was very cool. They had one of the ministers, too.
If you'd like to renew your vows with Steve, let me know. As always, I'm still free.
Oh, me?
Yeah. Well, no, who else am I talking to? Oh. Your husband's name is Steve.
Oh, I thought you met with you, Steve.
Have you met him?
I thought if you want me to renew, whatever. Well, listen, Rev, I don't know.
Okay, well, let me know. I mean, we could do it out on your porch where the exercise equipment is.
I'll wait till we get to 35.
It's 9:34. Oh, man, am I late. But we're talking about important wedding stuff. We'll come back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Havana, oh, nah, nah. Hey. Half of my heart is in Havana, oh, nah, nah. Hey. Hey. He took me back to East Atlanta, nah, nah, nah. All of my heart is in Havana. Hey. There's something about his manners. Uh-huh. Havana, oh, nah. He didn't walk up with that, how you doing? When he came.
Number one album in the country.
Love this song.
Camila Cabello. That's her full name.
I know.
Yeah.
Such a good song. Very sexy song.
I don't know what temperature it is in Havana, but it's warmer here.
Yeah, much warmer
than
here.
Than you said before.
We have. It seemed a little bit low, so I refreshed this browser and went to WGNradio.com instead of our normal temperature site. And we can confirm 50 at O'Hare, 52 at Midway, and 50 degrees along Chicago's lakefront.
There you go. It is the 13th wedding anniversary of Donald Trump and Melania Trump today, and neither one has tweeted happy anniversary to the other.
Ah, bummer.
What is 13? What's the traditional gift?
13 is Stormy Daniels' accusations. Yes,
divorce 13. Papers. 13. No. Wait, let me see. I'll get the list of what would be on 13.
One, I think, is paper. Yeah. 25 is silver. 50 is gold. 75 is.
Ooh, guess what? 13.
We're surprised we're still here. What's 13?
Lace.
I don't think Trump's going to be seeing any of that.
Lace. They have the traditional and then the modern. So the lace is the traditional and the modern is textile furs.
What do you think he got her for the anniversary? An apology?
I don't know.
You got to wonder. One of the things that came out of Stormy Daniels creepy interview in Touch. And there's no explanation about why they had this material in 2011 and they never ran it. Not during the campaign, not when they had it in 2011, other than the fact that there was a threat of a lawsuit. And was there a payoff to the magazine or the magazine management types? We don't know. But one of the things that came out in the magazine piece was Stormy Daniels in conversations with Donald Trump. She made fun of his hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he, according to her, let on that he was superstitious about it. Not didn't use that word, but felt that he would lose his power if he cut his hair.
Mm-hmm. Like Samson, right? From biblical times?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the guy with the son and the garbage thing.
No.
Isn't that Samson and Son?
That's Sanford and Son. Oh. It's so close.
So anyway, I don't know what they're going to do for each other for their anniversary. I'm guessing maybe it's a little tense forever. But, you know, the president likes the strawberry and the raspberry, the pink and the red Starburst.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into these at a grocery store. These are the Flavor Red's Fave Red Starburst minis, and they're unwrapped. So as a show of support for this White House, since I can't agree with anything they've done or said, I got the Starburst instead and shared them with you guys. But you guys barely touched them.
I thought they were very good. Dave didn't eat them.
I did not have any.
No.
President Trump's favorites. There you go.
Mini. And it's funny that they're just the pink and the red, too.
That's it.
I didn't know they did that.
That's it. All right, cheap plug time at 9:49. Dave, you're going to do the American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb. When?
That is coming up on Sunday, March 11th.
Sunday, March 11th. And how do you get on your team?
You can go to WGNradio.com/events, or you can go to the American Lung Association website and sign up.
Okay. And whether you're 5 or 75, you are welcome to be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And with every step, you're going to be able to fund research to find a cure for lung cancer and other lung diseases. Register now. 89 cents. 89 cents of every dollar goes directly to education, research, and advocacy. That's a good number.
And you can go, Steve, we've talked about this. You don't have to climb all four towers of presidential towers. You could just go climb one tower.
Mm-hmm. Or climb one flight.
Yeah. That's all you have to do.
I'll climb a flight.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'll give you a chance.
I already told Dave what I'm going to do is, and I'm committing to all four elevators.
I think that's...
I'm not going to do just one elevator bank. I'm doing all four elevator banks. So I'm going to bring a check, and a substantial one, and I will take the elevator to the top of the first tower. And people might be saying, Steve, can you possibly do more? And I said, oh, yes, I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take the elevator back down. I'll move to the second tower, and I'll do the same. Same for the third. Same for the fourth. And when I get to that fourth elevator bank, and I'm waiting, and I push the button, they might be saying, I've never seen anything like this. How does he do it? How is it possible? He'll be able to take the elevator one more time, and yet I will.
You know what? You can argue almost that you might be doing more work than Ennett because you're writing a check. You're pushing the elevator button. You're getting in the elevator. I mean, that's a lot going on.
So I'll take the elevator to the top in the fourth tower, and I'll present the check.
That'll be nice.
Okay. Take the elevator down, and I'll go home.
Will you take my check, too? As long as you're doing it. I know it's more work.
It's a lot to ask.
I know.
I'm going to be honest with you. That's a lot to ask.
Anyway, it's a great event. It's a lot of fun. Everybody enjoys it. It's very doable.
It's in it to win it.
How do people get in?
Again, WGNradio.com, or you can go to the...
Fightforairclimb.org?
Fightforairclimb.org. That's the one I was trying to come up with.
There you go. Yes. And we hope you'll join Dave and the rest of us and me in the elevator. at 9:50, Bill and Wendy are coming up at 10. And again, we'll talk more about this tomorrow when DeCoste is here. But John DeCoste and I and Larry Reeb and Tim Becker had a great time at the Metropolis in Arlington Heights Saturday night. And met a bunch of people in the lobby afterwards. Had a great show. And met a bunch of people in the lobby afterwards. And talked to a ton of folks. But one of them that came up has a couple of adopted kids. She fostered kids first. And then she adopted two of the kids. And she's raising those kids. She's an amazing woman. I don't have her permission to say her name or the kids' names. Otherwise, I would, because I was stupid. I didn't ask. But I don't want to throw her name out there if she doesn't want her name on the air. But very impressive, and so many of the people were, and they're just great. A bunch of really nice people that came out and left. There was one woman who, her husband had bought tickets for the shows I was doing last spring. And then I had that troublesome little pulmonary embolism episode.
Yeah.
So I had to cancel a show. So he dropped me a note before the show, and he said, we missed your show in the spring. We're here tonight. So I go out with the note, and I recognize his wife for the birthday. Well, she's got her arms folded. She's mad.
Oh, she was mad.
She did not want to be embarrassed. Well, that's the wrong move with me.
Oh, no.
So I had the whole crowd sing her happy birthday.
Oh, that was nice, though.
But she didn't crack. She still was upset with him. And I thought, he's doing a sweet thing. She shouldn't be mad. So I asked her what she got for her birthday, and you know, she didn't really say anything. So I went backstage, and I got her a six-pack of Diet Pepsi and a cold pizza we had left over, and I brought that out to her.
Oh, that was so generous.
Yeah, I thought it was big. And then I gave her $20 from my wallet.
Yeah, that's kind of your go-to. That's like go-to your signature move.
Yeah, it's a signature move of 20.
But who can't use $20?
Everybody wants $20. $20 is usable almost anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah, and then I got the audience to sing again.
Oh, God.
And she cracked. She cracked. She smiled then. Yeah, she cracked.
Yeah, ask her husband, you know, how the rest of the night went.
You know, it's all about the ride in the car on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can be troublesome. All right, so we gave you the plug for the Fight for Air Climb. Don't forget, if you want to get in on our Vegas contest, a picture of you proving you're the ultimate Blackhawk fan at WGNradio.com/contest, and you could join us in Vegas.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I've only got like 30 seconds here, right? Before I need to take this last break. So congratulations to the Kardashian-Kanye union. They spawned again. And the latest spawn is a baby named Chicago.
Chicago.
Chicago West.
They're already bragging that Chicago has, a clothing line now. But don't they have that already at like Walgreens? And I mean, you can go anywhere and buy it.
Yeah, Chicago shirts that say Chicago on them.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And shouldn't it be West Chicago? West, comma, Chicago, as opposed to Chicago.
Good point, Steve. Technically, West Chicago's not Chicago, though. So if they wanted to keep it Chicago, they'd have to keep it Chicago West.
I understand they were torn between Chicago and L-Train. I don't know. A couple minutes before Bill and Wendy, they're next. Some people might argue I could make this statement at 6 a.m., but there's nothing more we can do. Bill and Wendy are here now. What are you guys planning?
We are going to officially change our name. I'm going to be Brookfield Snyder. You're going to be Oak Forest Left.
Yeah,
right?
In honor of
where
Chicago
we were born.
West.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And also, Steve, Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas is coming on, and I'm going to ask her about the time she almost pitched a no-hitter. She came within one out of pitching a no-hitter.
She was great.
Yeah.
That was melt.
She was great.
I'm
Bruce
sorry, Dave.
Was
melt. Milt Pappas.
Not Rosenberg.
Wow, even I knew that was Milt Pappas.
Was Milt Pappas ever a treasurer in Cook County?
For a little while, yeah.
Oh. Well, that's why you're confused.
Yep.
I got your back.
Thank you for that.
Come on.
Thank you.
Here's Wendy.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.